its meeting today and tomorrow. We're also honored to have a great many very special guests. As you see, this is a very closed meeting because we didn't want to make a very large ceremony of it, but we're delighted to welcome some of our neighbors here who have joined us in this ceremony. Now, on this occasion, it's an especially pleasing opportunity to be able to present to you our representative Staggers, who has worked with us since the very inception of the observatory to make satisfactory arrangements for us to occupy this site and to work with us in the Congress in our arrangements there. And I'm most happy to present to you Congressman Staggers. We're delighted to have you here today.
Thank you, Dr. Burns. Dr. Burton, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is my high honor and privilege to be here at this dedication, I assure you, for two reasons. First, to present the American flag to Dr. Burton, president of Associated Universities Incorporated, for use at this observatory. And second, to pay tribute to three great Americans. First of these, Dr. Alan T. Waterman, director of the National Science Foundation in Washington. Dr. Waterman is not only a scholar, a scientist, a great American, but he's a man of integrity and a man that I am proud to call friend. Second is Dr. Lloyd Berkner, president of Associated Universities Incorporated. Dr. Berkner is a man, as you have seen here today, of great energy, a man of vision, a man of science, and a man that will get things done. The third is Dr. Richard Emberson. I don't even know what official title to call Dick. But I'll tell you that Dick, to me, is one of the finest type of American citizens that we can find anywhere in the land. Scientist, organizer, good fellow, and just a grand guy, and another man that I'm glad to call friend. We can be proud of these men. Perhaps, I don't know where history will record them, but their activities in behalf of this institution and other activities similar to it across America will have a great deal to do with the destiny not only of you and your children and of this land, but of civilization itself. We are here to dedicate this building, and I'm here to present the flag. But it was 133 years ago that one of our great presidents, John Quincy Adams, said in his first inauguration speech to the Congress of the United States, something to the effect that, in accordance with building a university, to put there an observatory with an astronomer to watch the happenings of the heavens and to record those happenings and to publish them so that the people could see. Now here, 133 years later, we are doing just as he envisioned at that time, putting up a lighthouse of the skies and to be a larger one over here that will help to make this a great land and to aid in our progress and in our security and in our way of life. This American flag that I am to present to Dr. Burton is symbolic of the understanding and the working conditions between the elected representatives in Washington and the scientists who will work here at Green Bank and the other scientists across America that are working together to make this a better America, a stronger America, and a better place in which to live. Dr. Burton, it is my sincere pleasure to present to you this flag with my compliments. And to all of you assembled, I say, may your future pathway through life be through green pastures and beside the still waters.
Thank you, Representative Staggers. Could we have the flag raised at this time? May I say, while the flag is raised, that I think I could pay you no better compliment than to say that we're all very happy to be your neighbors here in West Virginia. I think it's very symbolic that this flag, which has flown over the U.S. Capitol, should now fly aside of our new telescope, which is just being completed here. And I have in front of me a statement from George Stewart, architect of the Capitol, says, "Dear Congressman Staggers, this is to certify that the enclosed flag has flown over the Capitol of the United States. It is my understanding that you will present this flag to the National Radio Astronomy Observatory at Greenbank, West Virginia. Representative Staggers, we're very happy to accept this flag, and we're very grateful to you for thinking of us in bringing it here today." I may add that this flag will be saved, and when we dedicate the big laboratory at a later date, it will fly over the permanent flagpole of the laboratory down near the farther end of the road to be the number one flag at the observatory. Dr. Brown could not be here today for reasons that you may have known and seen in the paper, but he sends the following telegram. As chairman of the National Science Board and president of the National Academy of Sciences, I send to you and your colleagues congratulations on the inauguration of this new facility for the exploration of our universe and the extension of men's minds. Best wishes for the future of your great adventure. Signed, Detlef W. Brown, president of the National Science Foundation and of the National Academy. We have three very special guests here today for reasons that you'll learn later, and I would like to introduce them at this time. I wonder, Mrs. Tatel, if you and Miss Tatel and David would stand up so that everyone could see you as our very special guests here this afternoon. It's now my real pleasure to ask our old friend, Dr. Waterman, who's worked almost as hard in getting this facility as any of the others of us, and in some cases, I think, a good deal harder, if you'd make a few remarks at this time, Al. Dr. Waterman, the director of the National Science Foundation.
Day effort consists of the toil, sweat, and tears that seem to be necessary to ensure the continuance of scientific effort. The Greenbank Project has had an ample share of this kind of effort, as Dr. Berkner has just suggested, and as those of us can testify who have lived with its budgetary vicissitudes. Today, however, we can put these things behind us and join in the general satisfaction that the accomplishment of a major step forward brings with it. Just 1 year ago, we were meeting here to join in a symbolic groundbreaking ceremony marking the beginning of a new observatory. On the anniversary of that occasion, we are here to dedicate the first of the two major instruments that will constitute the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. The National Science Foundation congratulates Associated Universities and the Blonox Corporation on having passed the first milestone. Such a ceremony as this is, of course, in no way essential to our final objective. We could push the observatory through to completion and put it into operation without so much as an hour's loss for ceremonial purposes. But this occasion affords opportunity for the scientific community to observe a significant step in an impressive undertaking, while at the same time it attracts the attention of others to the plans and the thinking of those engaged in the pursuit of pure science. Such an individual chooses science as a career, not because he thinks it is going to make him rich or even famous, but because it offers spiritual and intellectual satisfaction beyond those of other fields, and because it satisfies the creative urge associated with all pioneering. He may not think of it in those terms, but he has in effect chosen to dedicate himself to the service of mankind. It is appropriate, therefore, that we should, from time to time, pause to honor the intellectual labors that have done so much to enrich and benefit mankind, and in so doing, to honor the men who have devoted themselves to their pursuit. 50 years ago, the London Times, commenting on the jubilee of the Oxford Museum, observed, "There was no practical need for Tycho Brahe to don his richest robes when he entered his observatory, but our hearts warmed to him for this visible sign of reverence for his work. Similarly, it could be said that there is no practical need for us to gather here today to dedicate the great steel structure that will shortly give us yet another window on the universe. But we do so because we wish to honor those activities that are undertaken solely because they widen our horizons and increase our storehood of knowledge. The United States has lagged behind other nations in the proper acknowledgement of and tribute to intellectual achievement. Where is there a street named for a poet or a scientist, outside of some scientific communities like Brookhaven and Los Alamos? In Russia, by contrast, the great thoroughfares are named for musicians and poets. The big new university in Moscow honors the scientist Lomonosov, and there is scarcely a square that has not its statue to a writer or scholar. Nor must we lose sight of the fact that these visible tributes to intellectual activity are powerful incentives, along with the material advantages the state holds out as the reward for scholarly achievement. For years, we have been in this country glorifying the businessman, the banker, the entrepreneur, in general, men of affairs, men of action. While we do not begrudge this to them, is it any wonder that they have become the symbols of achievement? And the scholar, the long hair who failed to make the grade. Surely there is room in the great diversity and richness of our culture for the proper respect for both. Circumstances have conspired to make this a particularly happy occasion. We may be pardoned if we still bask a little in the glow of pioneers' spectacular flight. We take special satisfaction in the role played by radio astronomy in the successful tracking of this moon rocket. It is typical of scientists, incidentally, that we should have received such prompt and generous congratulations from fellow scientists around the world. We are especially fortunate in having with us today, to dedicate the new telescope, a man whose family has for generations been in the habit of founding observatories. Otto Struve's great-grandfather, Friedrich Wilhelm Struve, built and became the first director of the great observatory at Pulkovo, a post which passed to his son upon his death. His uncle moved to Neubabelsberg and completely remodeled the old observatory of Berlin, and his father was professor of astronomy at the University of Krakow. Dr. Struve's own career in astronomy is too well known to need recapitulation here, but I might remind you that it includes, in a long list of distinguished achievements and honors, the founding of the McDonald Observatory in Texas. We are glad to have him take part in this ceremony today, for his presence brings with us the aura of a great scientific tradition. We hope for the observatory that is being established here some of the luster that has attended the observatories associated with the name of Struve. For all of us, the occasion is one of high anticipation. The realization of fine new research facilities is always a cause for rejoicing, but certainly never more so that in this the dawn of the so-called space age. The foundation joins with associated universities, with the staff of the observatory, and with friends here at Green Bank in wishing for the observatory a brilliant future as it prepares to join the ranks of those whose task it is to probe the unknown.
Thank you very much, Dr. Waterman, for honoring us here today. And you will notice that we have a tape record of your remarks on the occasion of this dedication. It now gives me great honor indeed to ask one of our distinguished trustees, one of the world's distinguished astronomers, to dedicate this telescope, Dr. Struve.
Astronomers and just ordinary astronomers. I was touched by the remarks which Dr. Waterman made about my family, and I can assure you that he knows the history correctly. 10 days ago, I was attending a meeting of the International Council of Scientific Unions in Washington. And I was talking with Dr. Oort, the famous astronomer of Leiden, Holland, who wanted me to participate in a small conference pertaining to the International Astronomical Union. And I had to tell Dr. Oort that I would not be able to attend this conference because the president of the National Academy and National Research Council Space Science Board, Dr. Berkner, had just appointed me to Professor Goldberg's Committee on Astronomy in Space Research and had given me strict orders to report to Dr. Goldberg the following day. And I added that the President of the International Council of Scientific Unions, Dr. Berkner, had told me that I could safely cut short my attendance of IXU and go to Ann Arbor. And Oort turned to me and he said, "Struve, I can see you are a good soldier of General Berkner's army." Well, as a soldier in the armed forces of an allied nation, long ago I learned that it is the duty of a soldier to obey the orders of his superior officers. And I am standing here because I could see nothing unlawful in the orders which I had received from Lloyd Berkner, and I knew that the only excuse a soldier has for disobeying orders is if he recognizes that the order violates the law. It is true that I can see no very good reason why an old-fashioned stellar spectroscopist should talk to radio astronomers about radio astronomy at the dedication of a radio telescope. But perhaps while we are assembled here for this happy occasion, it is appropriate that we should also celebrate 70th anniversary of the great work of Heinrich Hertz, who in 1888 discovered the existence of radio waves. As most of you know, he became interested as a very young man in Maxwell's theory of electromagnetic waves, a theory that was published just a little more than 100 years ago. And Hertz was experimenting with oscillating discharges by means of a spark, and he was able to detect sparks in between the ends of a coil of wire placed at a distance from the transmitter. He discovered that metal plates would reflect the radio waves,
and that when the beam of the radio waves fell at right angles upon the reflecting surface, standing waves were created so that the spark in the coil would be observed only at regular intervals and not throughout the space between the transmitter and the receiver. It would be inappropriate for me to try to tell you what this 85-foot telescope will accomplish. But I think it might be appropriate for me to say a few words primarily to the young astronomers who are now connected with this observatory and who will be coming here from other institutions. As you know, most of my work in the past have been concerned with research. But after I went to the University of California, I found that one of the most rewarding activities was teaching, and especially the teaching of very young students. And I found to my surprise that these young students, the brightest among them, would frequently ask me questions of very profound and deep interest. And it shocked me to realize that these fundamental questions of physical science, such as the meaning of inertia or the meaning of the concept of the age of the universe, are questions that I used to ask when I was a very young man. And I want to ask the young astronomers to try to realize what I think I have realized too late in my life, that the aging process of the human mind involves a gradual attempt to stay away from the most profound problems of science, those problems that are most difficult to answer. Now, I do not recommend that the young astronomers should all become visionaries who are only thinking about problems that they will perhaps never be able to answer. But in looking at this telescope, I hope that the younger astronomers who have an extraordinary opportunity to carry on important research in the field of astronomy will carry on the routine tasks of science that must be done in an atmosphere of great ideas. And now, on behalf of the trustees of AUI, and on behalf of the astronomers who are assembled here, the astronomers of the United States and the whole world, I want to call special attention to this tablet. It honors the memory of Mr. Tatel, Howard Tatel, who has done so much to develop radio astronomy, and many of whose ideas are incorporated in the telescope you are seeing here. I thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Professor Struve. I have here a telegram from the Dutch radio astronomers, which I think we all particularly appreciate because of their position of leadership in the science of radio astronomy. It's to the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, and it says, "Best wishes for your venture into the unknown." Signed, the Dutch radio astronomers. Before we close this ceremony, there are two things that I think we should do. One is to introduce you all to the staff of the Radio Astronomy Observatory who are sitting on this side. Would the staff stand up so that everyone can see you? people that are primarily responsible for the large piles of dirt that you see around and the structures that you now see growing on top of them. Secondly, I wonder if Mr. Jackson from the Blonox Corporation and Mr. Hall, the designer of this telescope, are present. I wish if they were, they would come up here so that we could give them a hand. Mr. Jackson, Mr. Hall. They're very modestly back there on the platform of the telescope. We're very pleased to have you here. Mr. Jackson, of course, is responsible in the Blonox Corporation for this work, and Mr. Hall is the engineering designer of the telescope itself. Hall, as you know, used the model originally developed by Howard Tadel as the basic concept for this telescope. May I now say to you, on behalf of the staff of the Radio Astronomy Observatory and on behalf of the trustees of Associated Universities Incorporated, how appreciative we are for your presence here today. We're all delighted to have this opportunity to dedicate this new instrument, which, as Dr. Waterman has said, will now soon go into service to press through our window into the universe around us. And I hope with this tool and other tools like it that we will have here at the observatory that we can do our share to extend the boundaries of human knowledge and, as you have said, to direct our attention to some of the really fundamental problems in human thought that remain unanswered. Thank you very much for being here today.